Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Well, hey there, everyone. It's Stormy Warren welcoming you on the bus at Country Thunder with executive producer Troy Volhoffer. Coming to you from Music City, we can't wait to chat with all of our friends in country music. Get ready for real talk about the state of the music industry, thoughts and insights from some of its biggest stars, and more than a few backstage stories from the 6 annual Country Thunder events held all across North America. I know I'll be sharing some great stories in a future episode. So buckle up and get ready for your new favorite podcast. Here's Troy.
I'm your host, Troy Volhoffer, with our very special guest today, Williams and Ree. Terry and Bruce, you've been doing this a long time. I'm so happy to have you on the show finally. Let me give you a little background. Williams and Ree have been together for now over 40 years and making people laugh throughout North America. We're going to way back now. We're going to go way back. We're going back to the beginning. Now, let's start out from where are you guys from originally?
I'm from Pierre, South Dakota.
I'm from Mountain Home, Idaho.
And how did you guys get together?
You know, that's a common question.
A lot of people ask, how did we get together? When
did we get together? Will we get together? Are there any
together? We're not really sure ourselves how it actually happened.
What actually happened is I removed a thorn from the Indian's paw.
It's one of those things. We actually met in college, 1968. The end of August, 1968, mm-hmm. We met Spearfish, South Dakota. We were in the same dorm, Pangburn mm-hmm. Hall.
Right.
And they have since destroyed Pangburn Hall.
It got
rather
too
than
old.
Making it a memorial
to us.
To
yes.
us,
yes.
They just knocked the damn thing down.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there are better memorials than that necessarily, like Mount Rushmore. I think you both should have your head sculpted into the mountain now that you are iconic.
Yes,
we tried that. We tried suggesting that, and they looked at Terry's head and they said, "We just don't have enough rock."
Well, they. We didn't actually try that. He just ran his head into a rock wall one time. That's what happened.
So you start out as an actual music act. You are an actual band, right?
Yeah, we started out just playing at the girls' dormitory. We'd go over to the girls' dormitories, and this was before co-ed dorms, you know.
Yes.
And we'd go outside because you couldn't go in the dorm. You'd get expelled from school if you went in the girls' dorm.
Yes.
So we'd sit out on the lawn and we'd play our guitars and the girls would come down and we'd have a little hootenanny out in front.
We met in college, but what Bruce didn't know at that time, nor did I know about him, our upbringings were the same. I had a band in high school. He had a band in high school, actually junior high, won that
yep.
contest in junior high and won it in high school, and then played in back of pickup trucks on Main Street for crazy days. And mm-hmm. and then I had established working three nights a week in lounges. And so I was already a famous guy in South Dakota. Terry Recombo.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Love it.
Yes.
It's a ring to it.
TRC.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
Yes. That was me. And then I met him and...
And we started jamming in his room. We just started doing, you know, he taught me all these old country songs and I would just chime in on the harmonies and stuff. And
yeah. And I found as soon as I heard him sing with me, I thought, boy, do I sound better. And that's why I've kept him around this long.
Yeah.
Ooh. He's made me sound better.
I just, you know, I'm so proud to be, which I would call, first of all, your friend. And I'm so proud of your career in the sense that, you know, you never had to work a day job in your life. And, you know, even in show business, virtually your whole adult life. I mean, that's hard to be said. I mean, there's a lot of people who can't have that. That's an accolade that no one can take away from you.
Yeah, actually, I did work a couple of day jobs when I was in eighth and ninth grade. I would wash dishes in a Liberty Cafe for 50 cents an hour after school till 9 o'clock. And then three nights a week, I would scrub the floors for 75 cents an hour.
Wow.
And the first, I'd work every day after school and weekends, and I would take home about $19.
Wow.
So the first time I got to play in a club, I made $20 for two nights, my brother and I. And from there, I said, I'll never work again.
So coming out of South Dakota, you get your act going. Obviously, there's some interest. Who, how, and when did it start to happen for you that you started to get booked on bigger dates? When did you get your agent, your manager? How did that all come to be?
We left college in the fall of 70, between 71 and 72. We were 68, 69, 69, 70, 70, 71. Okay, so the fall of 71, we went on the road. We took our little band, our little four-piece band, and went on the road. We had an agent out of Minneapolis named Augie Morin. And he booked us a couple places, and we had about three gigs booked when we left town, and then we got a fourth one, and we were there for several weeks. Yes. Into the fall.
Breezy they held Point, us over.
Yeah, they held yeah. us over every week. Gave us it was a resort in Minnesota, and we stayed there for several weeks and then went in to...
You need to take that?
No, I'm going to shut it off.
You're a winner.
Could be a date.
You're a winner.
There we go. All right, so anyway...
Your car's warranty is...
That's how we started and...
Before that, we were in school and we had a little combo and we called it Terry Ree and the Crossroads. And we got a chance to open for this comedy and music duo named Dennis and Cree. It was Marv Dennis and Ed Cree. And we opened at Philtown in Sturgis, South Dakota, opened the show for them, and we made $300, and they made $3,000.
Wow.
And we watched their show, and it was a combination of comedy and music, and we just went bananas. It was like, this is what we need to do. We need to have more of a show and we need to incorporate comedy into the show.
We weren't really after the show. We were after the money.
Yep.
I mean, they were making way more than we were. And we thought we needed to do that because we can be just as good as they.
So we actually did their show. We stole their show. Yeah. We copied it. We did it better than they did.
Yeah.
Actually.
So we started, we were 3 years in college, and then we go on the road, and from 71 till 81, we were working lounges, little showrooms, worked Canada. Winnipeg Inn was the top of the room for us. I mean, the Winnipeg Inn was a fabulous place. Two acts, you know, every night, and it was just like Las Vegas to us.
Sure.
Coming out of South Dakota bars and every other bar that we worked. And so we started getting a little more money, and we were actually booked for like 2 years. booked ahead for 2 years, and we decided, well, we need to get to the next level. And so we told our agent at that time, if you can get us with a bigger agent, we'll keep you on as manager. So he pitched us to a couple. Jim Halsey was one. The other was Rod Essick, who was with Variety at that time.
Right.
And they both wanted us, but we selected Halsey because of all the big acts that he had, country acts that he had.
Yeah, and just to give you an idea, Halsey Agency ended up selling to William Morris, but their roster included Roy Clark, who was probably one of the biggest males in that at that yeah. time period. Yeah. The Oak Ridge Boys, who Halsey yeah. also managed.
Mel Tillis, Merle Haggard.
The list goes on,
yeah,
right?
They had everyone in the country
yeah,
business. So we got to work with all those people. And so that was our first 13, 14 years of working. And then I remember the date we actually had opened for the Oak Ridge Boys in Willmar, Minnesota, March 25th, 1981, yeah. And they had just had Elvira, and Elvira was a big hit, and they were drawing 10,000 people,
yeah.
You know, couldn't. The places that they played couldn't hold the crowd. So
big act.
Yeah.
The biggest act up until Alabama hit as an actual band.
Right. Yeah. So so in between that we had gone to Los Angeles to work the Comedy Store, tried to do the Tonight Show. That was our goal, was to do the Tonight Show.
And we've recently been watching the five-part documentary on the Comedy Store that Mike Binder did on Showtime. And we found out something, a revelation from the first episode concerning what we decided to do when we were at the Comedy Store. We went there in 1977 and we started working out as regulars there. And our goal, as Terry said, was to do the Tonight Show.
Yeah.
And after being there for 2 years and getting good response and we thought we were on our way, he confronted the booker for the Tonight Show, Jim McCauley, about whether or not we would do the Tonight Show. And you take it from there, Terry.
Yeah, I called him and asked him if we were going to do the Tonight Show. He said, no, you'll not do the Tonight Show. You're not funny. He told us we were not funny. There's two of you. You don't do jokes. You do music and comedy, and you'll just never do the Tonight Show. So I hung up the phone. The reason we had gone to California to the Comedy Store, and what we would do, we wanted to get to that next level, get some TV. And so we did get TV. We did Don Kirshner's rock concert. We did, was it Midnight Special? That was a...
Make Me Laugh.
We did Make Me Laugh.
Dinah Shore Show.
Comedy
Shop.
Comedy Shop. There were several. We did some television, but our goal was to do the Tonight Show. And what we would do is we'd go out there and we'd work for free for 2 weeks. Then we'd come back to the Midwest and work for 2 weeks. And we'd go out there and living and paying two households, one in L.A. and one in South Dakota, and it was just, we were struggling to get there. And when I called the guy from the Tonight Show and he said, we won't do the Tonight Show, I used some abusive language on him and hung up the phone and picked up the phone and called Bruce and said, I'm going home. I'm done with this. This guy said, we're not going to do the Tonight Show. And I thinking that we were the only guys that he ever told, you'll never do the Tonight Show. Well,
then from seeing that first episode on Showtime of the Comedy Store documentary.
Yeah, I'm watching Tim Allen, Howie Mandel, and Louis Anderson, and they're all talking, and they say, Jim McCauley told us we'll never do the Tonight Show.
So that was his answer to anyone who asked him the question.
Anyone he didn't want to you know, school to do the Tonight Show, because he would actually take the acts, the comedians, and say, okay, you can't use this line, you can't use that line. Let's write this in there, and let's put that in there. And he would guide them right. into a 6-minute routine. And then I would go do that. The reason we went to LA anyway, the first for not only to do the TV, but we wanted to get out of the bars because the bars that we were playing, they wouldn't let us do our show. Right. You know, we'd have to do two dance sets and two shows, you know. And when we'd get out there and try to do our show, people would come out and dance to Running Bear and yeah. Kalijah. And
so when you did your audition with Mitzi Shore at the Comedy Club in Los Angeles, who was with her to actually give you the nod that you made? You actually made it, because it's hard to even make it at the Comedy Club to be a regular. I mean, yeah. that's a feat in itself.
Yeah, watching that Comedy Store documentary, I find out that the people that we talked to, Mike Binder was one of them. Mm-hmm. Argus Hamilton was another one. These were up-and-coming comedians at that time, and they were door people. They were at the door. They were seating people, selling tickets, and that sort of thing. And we find out from that documentary that you started that way. Mitzi would hire you as a doorman, sell tickets, bartender, this and that, and then eventually put you on stage, and eventually you would become a regular. Well, they told us, call Mitzi tomorrow, which was a Monday or whenever it was, and ask her if you could do a showcase, and maybe she'll let you showcase, you know. So I called her, and she said, yeah, showcase at 9 o'clock. I'll get you a spot at 9 o'clock. You'll be on at 9 o'clock. So we go there Monday night with, it's a free-for-all. It's called a
open mic
night. The crowd, I mean, the people who were on lined up down the street, standing for 5 minutes, you know, and it was like 6-7 o'clock they started, and we were on at 9 o'clock. So we go in at 9 o'clock, and sure enough, we go up and we do our shtick. And compared to these other people, we ran away with it. We killed them, you know.
Yeah.
And lucky for us, seated with Mitzi Shore at that time was Robin Williams and
Richard Pryor,
and they laughed. And so the next day I called her, and she said, you guys are great. I can put you on as regulars. I can put you on tonight. You'll start tonight. You'll be on every night. I'll give you a slot every night. I said, whoa, 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 no. We have to go home to South Dakota and straighten things out, and then we'll come back out here. We'll come back in a couple of weeks, and we'll start. Okay, just call me when you're ready. So she put us, you know, graduated us from comedy college with an audition.
That's
compared to the others who worked their way
and
up.
Just give our listeners who were the people you're performing with each night.
Oh, when we were there, Robin Williams wasn't Robin Williams. He was just funny.
Well, he was
David Letterman wasn't David Letterman. He wasn't even funny.
He was funny.
Jay Leno was the top of the rung, and he wasn't Jay Leno, but he worked a lot. And the big dog was Jimmy Walker. And
Dynamite.
Yeah, Jimmy Walker, and he would he was a comedian, you know. I mean, he was, and he hired all these acts, and he'd sign people to his company, and he signed us to his company, thinking that we were going to write some jokes for him. We didn't have any idea what he wanted, nor did we have any idea how to write jokes. So we that never happened. But
most of our material was routines that we developed from ad libs and asides during conversation on stage.
Right. Yeah,
we didn't really formulate jokes. It was always him talking and me throwing in a non sequitur or talking.
Yeah. A lot of current affairs.
Yeah,
The newspaper in the morning, that'd be part of your material.
Yeah. And local towns where we were in, local businesses. And we
took that from Leno, too, because Leno would do current stuff, you know. So that became part of our thing,
too.
Well,
the fans embrace you at that point when you talk about something that is from their hometown. And and they feel like, oh my, like you actually, you know, really know about the city you're playing in.
Yeah.
Like we did our homework, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's super neat.
And we didn't really take that from Leno. We had done that from the beginning of working in Spearfish and Belfouche and Deadwood and Rapid City. And
we sucked up to just about everybody.
Yeah. On your way into town, you see signs for sex hour granary or something, you know, and then you talk about Sex Hour Granary.
Yeah.
But, you know,
because that was just funny, a funny name, Sex Hour.
And they have all the places, every little town has a funny name, you know, something that you just relate to. And then people have been in the town, have been laughing about it for years. Sure. And then we become one of them.
How did you, what stage in your career did you make the move to Nashville, and how'd that come about?
Well, in 1981, when we opened for the Oak Ridge Boys, Duane Allen watched us, here's the deal. They wanted us to do 20 minutes. Said, you do 20 minutes. And their road manager, Raymond Hicks, kept coming in saying, you guys do 20 minutes. Don't you do any more than 20 minutes. And the reason was, the night before, they were somewhere in Illinois, and they had
David Frizzell and Shelley West.
Shelley West, and they were supposed to do 30 minutes, and they did hour, you know. And so the Oaks were very upset about that, because they wanted to go on at their time.
Yeah, and they had to put the union into overtime on the loadout, and it would cost the band a lot of money.
And so when they told us to do 20 minutes, we had 20 minutes. We had put together 3 6-minute routines in L.A. at the Comedy Store, preparing to do television shows with 3 6-minute bits. So we just went on stage in Wilmer, Minnesota, and did 3 6-minute bits, probably faster than normal, because we were nervous. 10,000 people there, you know, and they laughed, and they laughed, and they laughed, and we left. And just as the second hand hit 20 minutes, we said thank you, and we're off the stage. And Duane Allen was so impressed with that, he's standing there, and he says, man, your boat's in. Where you been?
Right.
said, well, we've been doing this for about 14 years, and he said, well, we can use you. We can use you on, we're doing a tour across Canada, and we can use you in Reno and Tahoe and Vegas, and I'm going to see that you're on those shows. And I thought, yeah, because everybody's told us that, you know. And so nobody did anything. But Duane picked up the phone the next day, called Jim Halsey Company, and said, put these guys on these shows with us. We want them on our show.
This is our support act.
Yeah. So we ended up touring quite regularly with them for about 2 years.
So how did the TV show Country Kitchen come to fruition? And how? Because that was an 8-year span of your career doing the Country Kitchen as the comedic part of the TV show, and probably made your greatest fame and notoriety from that TV show.
Oh yeah, we lucked out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when we were still in South Dakota, living in South Dakota in 1983, Bruce lived in Sioux Falls, I lived in Pierre, and he had cable in TV in Sioux Falls, but I didn't have all the cable channels in Pierre. And when I finally got all the cable channels in Pierre, TNN was one of them. And so I watched TNN for a couple of days, and I called him and I said, we got to go. We got to go to Nashville. TNN needs us. And so we actually flew down here. Ralph Emery had the Tonight Show. You know, it was Nashville Now. And I said, we need to go do that show. And so we called him and found out how they, well, you do an audition. So we flew down here and did an audition for the Ralph show. What was her name? We called her the Ice Queen.
Deborah Bronner.
Deborah Bronner was the house booker.
Okay.
And she made us do a show for her. I mean, for just her and somebody else. And we did like 5 minutes, which was the only audition we ever did that we actually got.
Wow.
Yeah. Because
wow.
up until then, we auditioned several different places, different TV shows, different
casinos,
things, and never got one of them. But when we did the audition for Deborah Bronner, we got the Ralph Emery show.
So, and that lasted 8 years.
Well, no, that lasted the whole time till the network went off. But so we moved down here in 1984.
Okay.
And
but the cooking show was on for 8 years. Yeah.
Yeah, and we would do the Nashville Now show.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So for like 2 years, we did Nashville Now mm-hmm. every month or we did it quite a bit.
With Ralph.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Ralph would...
Shotgun Red.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ralph would say at the end of the show, he'd lean into Terry's ear and he'd say, why don't you guys get your own show and stay off of mine?
Yeah. Yeah.
So then your TV career continued on. And
yeah.
Well, the last couple years of Hee Haw, right?
After 2 years, yeah, and Hee Haw. After 2 years of here, we got offered the Country Kitchen show, which was with Florence Henderson. Mm-hmm. And
that was because the Hager twins, who were the original dessert chefs on the show the first season, it was such a popular show, they thought it was because of them that that the show was a success. And they came in after that and asked the producer for a raise. And he fired them on the spot. And we had just done one of his other shows, which was You Can Be a Star, which was a talent show. Yeah. And we had just done that, and we were fresh in his minds. And he called Terry and said, can you guys come back and see if you can try out for this Country Kitchen show as the dessert chefs? So
we were in California, actually,
yeah,
at Haggard's Club up in
Lake Shasta.
And
that was Merle Haggard.
Yeah, you ever been up there, Merle Haggard? Well, Lake Shasta is up on a big Shasta mountain, and it's a windy, windy road. And we did the show, got done, 1 o'clock in the morning. It was a bar, Merle Haggard's bar. And so we got done in there and drove back to San Francisco, took an early flight. Had to be back Sunday afternoon to do this thing. We get in like 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, go right to the studio and did a little audition for Alan Reed. And he said, okay, tomorrow morning we're gang shooting. Wow. Gang shooting, 13 shows in 5 days.
Really? So yeah. A whole season in 5 days?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's how quick that developed and how we got that.
And there were some serious guests on there. I mean, at the height of their career, you had Willie on that show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Garth.
Yeah.
Ed Garth.
I asked Willie to do the show, and he did it for me. But if you read Florence's book, she did it.
You called Willie.
But I asked Willie. We toe-to-toe. We were doing the Wrangler Showdown, filling in between each Wrangler Showdown contestant, and it was Willie Nelson's Wrangler Showdown. So we're in Austin, Austin, Texas, and they're having these bands come out, and it's set change. Every set change, we'd come out and we'd play a couple of songs. We had a little stage over the side, and we'd play and sing. And they told us, if you hear some noise up on the catwalk, it's probably Willie. He'll be up there watching the show. So we're doing our little shtick in between, and I hear rumbling moving around up there. And I said, if this was our show, if this was my show, if I was Willie Nelson, I would come down here and sing a couple of songs for you people. And the place just roared, And I kept saying that because I knew he was up there. And finally, about the third time,
Willie was creeping in the rafters.
Yeah, Willie was up in the catwalk watching the acts, And so finally, after about the third time, he said, hold on, I'm coming down there. And here he comes. So I take off my guitar and give it to him. And Bruce played, and they played for 40 minutes. I mean, just... Willie did. Bruce just kind of followed him.
I was playing every note I could and laying out most of the time, But man, it was such a thrill. Hey, what a guy.
So the next day we were in makeup to tape some things there. And Willie came in and sat down. He said, man, you guys are great. We'll tape. Tomorrow's the regular day. We're taping a show. I said, well, we're not on it. Oh, yeah. I said, no, we're not doing anything. Oh, no, you'll be on it. He said, you'll have to change your plans because you're on the TV show. So I said, okay. I said, did you like my 12 string? I played an Ovation 12 string, And he said, was that a 12 string? He had no clue it was a 12 string. He just played it,
Oh, that's brilliant.
And so then... So then when soon after that, I said, hey, we'd like you to come do Country Kitchen, the TV show with us. He said, oh, yeah, I can do that. He said, just have him call me, you know, his agent who lived in New York. So I told Alan Reed, call him, and sure enough, he did. And the day we were taping, he did Saturday Night Live Saturday night, and we were taping Sunday, on a Sunday. And he didn't show and didn't show. Nobody called. And Alan thought, for sure, he's not going to be here. As soon as his plane landed, they called and said, pick us up. Oh, and so that, brilliant. Yeah, it was right down to the wire, but he came over and did it, you know.
Well, that was just, and so this is going to lead me to another little opening act scenario that you did. Tell me about your involvement in Rocky, in the movie Rocky.
That was while we were at the Comedy Store.
I actually fought Rocky in the first movie, which didn't do well. But
he wound up on the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
Because they actually, when they widened out the shot and stuff, it was just a shot of Terry's gut.
Yeah. Well, when we were at the Comedy Store, they had the movie people would call and say, we need some people over here to entertain between set changes.
Yeah.
And things, you know, camera this.
Like when they're shooting the actual live shots of them fighting in the ring and the other arena full of extras or fans or whatever.
And this was for Rocky One, Rocky, you know,
so it was the 1978, the 77.
And
was
so
shot,
they ask all these people to come in and be crowd scene. They didn't have enough people to shoot all four sides. So they had people set on this side of the ring and they'd shoot that. And then they'd break and they'd ask everybody to move to this side of the ring. And then they break, and then they cheer and do all that. Then they move the rest of the people to the back side of the ring. I mean, four times you had to shoot the same thing over and over. And what we did in Rocky II was everybody had numbers, so we drew numbers and would give prizes away. That was our contribution to Rocky.
You were the entertainment between the changes.
We were the what'd they call us?
Warm-up
act, and then we draw prizes and give them away. And,
there's another industry that uses warm-up, I believe, right?
Yeah. Yes.
we're the perennial warm-up act. That's who we are.
Oh, it's such a great history, you know. And you know, that TV show was something that was really, really an interesting show. And, I mean, I urge our viewers to go YouTube it. It's called Country Kitchen with Florence Henderson and Williams and Ree. It's a great watch, and also, please check out the Hee Haw episodes. We're gonna fast forward to when we all met, and that would have been in the mid '80s, I believe, early '80s.
Would have been 1983.
But we go back a long ways, and we've had some amazing evenings. Let's go to a memory that I have. I think one of the greatest Williams and Ree shows that I saw was Tim McGraw was the headliner in Edmonton in the round at the Edmonton Rexall Coliseum. In the round, sold out, 18,000 people, and you absolutely hit the biggest home run I'd ever seen an artist hit.
We had been drinking. We had gone to dinner at Ruth Chris in Edmonton with friends of ours. You know who they are, and there was probably eight girls with them. Eight gorgeous young girls worked for the guy, and he took us all to dinner, and we had some nice wine. And time we got to the venue,
I was overloaded with testosterone and alcohol.
when we hit that stage and it started moving, you know, I mean, it was just magic. It was just one of those nights that was magic.
I'd never seen response. There was one other time I saw a response to your show that had the same. I mean, it wasn't cheering. It wasn't clapping. It was like mayhem.
Yeah.
McGraw came up to me and goes, these guys are on fire tonight. I'm going to have a hard time following
this. Yeah.
And he did. I mean, yeah. They really exerted their, I mean,
well,
it was amazing.
McGraw was out of shape then. He was two or 3 pounds overweight.
Yeah, you could really tell.
But yeah, it just happened that was one of those nights. And
the people were so, I mean, the people have always been wonderful to us in Edmonton. And that area has always been magical for us.
Yeah, I believe, though, that it was Canada. And not only were we half in the bag, the crowd was in the bag. Mm. And
and our helps. Canadian fans, they do like to drink beer, and rightfully so.
That's right.
That's a sport in Canada, and I mean, I'm telling you, it's a great sport.
Yeah, and you come out and you open. I remember the first thing I said was, it's such an honor to be in the house that Gretzky built.
I think that's how you won him over.
I know that's how we won him.
I mean, an Oilers fan is an Oilers fan till death. Yeah. I mean, they don't change. Their loyalty is loyal.
Yeah.
Tell us about the night that Tim McGraw was walking on the stage and he looked at you, both of you guys.
Yeah, Tim was on one side of the stage, and of course you can't go on that side of the stage because it's sealed, you know.
Yeah.
So we were on the other side waiting to go on to introduce him, and or we had just introduced him, and then of course you wait as they set the stage.
We were waiting backstage.
But Tim McGraw was on the other side of the stage warming up.
Stretching,
like taking...
Taking his leg and bending it back up to the back of his head.
Yeah.
You know.
Standing on one leg,
taking
the other leg and putting it straight above his head.
Yeah.
Now, I couldn't do that at birth.
Ballet dancers can't do that. No.
Yeah. No. And he was doing that.
Just a specimen.
And then he looked over and there we were, just both of us just looking at him, you know.
Yeah.
And he says, I thought you guys were dead.
He said, come on over here. And so we went in and we got the hug and everything. And he hugs Terry and you barely get his arms, you know, he's not that big a guy. He can barely get his arms around Terry. And then he grabs Terry's arm and gives it a pat. And then I go in for the hug. And then he squeezes my arm and you hear this, you know.
Did you ever try one of those in a rap kind of thing, like I was doing just now?
An Indian chant in rap form?
Maybe the Arapaho.
You know, I just want to make sure that the people understand where you guys came from and the history and, you know, the artists that you worked with or the list of what you've done is such an impressive list. There's not many people that have a list of accomplishments that you guys have as artists.
Yeah, it's been wonderful. I mean, we're grateful having gotten where we are. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not superstars. We were never superstars. Well, we've made a great living, and that's all you can hope for, you know, is to do something you want to do every day. And I'd like to do this every day. Get up in the morning, and I'm ready to do it.
Ready to go do a show?
Yeah.
It's funny because, you know, I've known you since I was probably 14 or 13 years old, and it just amazes me when I'm standing beside somebody, an agent, or watching your show, and they're like, these guys are the funniest guys I've ever heard. And I mean, I gotta tell you, I'm a victim of it too, because every time I watch your show, I laugh, and I laugh. You are two of the funniest guys I've ever met. You're two of the greatest showmen I've ever met. Thank you so much for being on our show today. Williams and Ree, to Williams and Ree, to ever.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, the bus is rolling to a stop. Thank you so much to our guests this week, and don't forget to like, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen. We'll see you next week. Country Thunder. Country Thunder. I want to look at this whole world with wonder. I want to feel that Country Thunder.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.